American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day! This is Sean Kennedy reporting to the Internet for Monday, September 1st, 2008. And that's right, this is Newsreel, the WOG Global Sitrep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today. And just by listening and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow up on all of these news stories, and you can check my facts by going to my live journal. And you can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, Radio Red Mercury, and in Second Life, Node Archers, Grid 137-102-9999. And if you enjoy this show, make sure you stick around in Second Life, because right around 8 o'clock-ish every Thursday night, that's Pacific time, there's a show that immediately follows mine called NewsGather. It's one of the most elite communal shows in cyberspace. Very, very cool. And, it's almost identical in almost every way to if you ever saw Ghost in the Shell standalone complex and they did like a rendition of an IRC channel where everyone's like sitting around a table and other people are sitting back and they're all discussing like relevant issues and things that are going on. That's pretty much what we're doing here. It's kind of like science fiction come to life very, very quickly. Just like, you know, the post-apocalyptic world's coming to life very, very quickly. If you don't believe me, go check it out where the show's being broadcast in the new wasteland at 340319.41 North and at 117-37-2950 West. And I'd like to give a big shout-out, officially on the record, for ReadySet. ReadySet and Baldy have been pretty instrumental in building up the cyberspace location inside of Second Life. They're the ones who've been training up everybody who shows up, so if you ever make your way in here and you have no idea what the hell's going on, ReadySet or Baldy are good people who will get you on the right path, but do not swamp them before they are very busy, and we love them. Because if it wasn't for them, I sure wouldn't know what I'm doing inside of Second Life as much as I don't know what I'm doing inside of there. But people like that are really the pioneers, and these are the ones who are... because, realistically, when you think about it, computers, you never learned about computers from a book. You always had a buddy, right? You always had a buddy who showed you, you know, how to pirate games. You got a buddy who showed you the first time you logged on, you played LAN games at his house, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, there's always somebody who took an interest and who showed you what's going on. Some people learned from the books, some people did, but it's always easier if you learn because somebody's there with you kind of holds your hand through the process. Second Life can be a scary place if you don't know what's going on, and I give Baldy huge props all the time because he's the guy who came up with the original concept and started the whole thing, but, I gotta say, you know, Reddy, she's the business. She really is. But let's move on to some other feedback I got here. Dear Sean, regarding the North American Union, what you seem to miss is that it is extremely unlikely the Constitution and the Bill of Rights would be retained in the North American Union. In that respect, there is no advantage for the USA to combine with either Canada or Mexico. You may think it's not important because we would all supposedly gain in natural resources, but I don't think it's worth the cost, especially because the powers that be would likely relocate the resources in their favor and not to benefit the common person. Thanks, Avagdu. Well, you know, to be honest with you, I totally agree. I'm not saying that I think the North American Union is going to happen and I think it's a good thing. I think it's an unavoidable thing. Yes, absolutely. We're gonna the Constitution. If you don't, it's not worth the paper it's printed on right now. I mean, they're adding amendments to it. They've already started by slowly wearing away at constitutional things, and I mean it's over. Okay, the game is up. I mean, the Constitution is not any good anymore. When they start having, people being arrested for library books, there's some serious problems going on in the universe, and these are things that need to be addressed. These are things that you got to look at this and go, damn. I think we got bigger problems here than just worrying about, you know, Iraq. You know, maybe all the war and all this stuff and everything is all just a huge distraction. Because like it or not, the North American Union is going to happen. Okay, the North American Union is going to happen. And there's not really a whole lot that we can do about it. If you rail against the machine and raise your fists and create a lot of noise, you're going to wind up getting thrown in a camp. So you can kind of, you can go that route. But what I would rather see the logs do is find a way to profit by this, to find a way to position themselves so they can manipulate themselves into an area of power so that they can slow the change or make the change, redirect the change. Treat it like a keto. Don't go against it. Okay, don't go against it by, you know, force on force. You're not going to win that. You're not going to win that. A great book you want to check out by Marishi Yushiba called The Dynamic Sphere. Fantastic read. And he talks about the whole concept of, you know, instead of trying to stop force, you guide it. It's easier to deflect than it is to resist. And so rather than presenting yourselves as a really viable target that can be, you know, very easily nailed down, I think we need to get people in place so that we can kind of shape and mold the laws the way we want to have them go. Maybe if we got WOGs to be cops, maybe if we got more WOGs in positions of authority where they could change things. That's the idea. You know, I'd rather have a WOG come up and knock on my door and be like, hey, man, yeah, you know, we're a little bit worried about this stuff. You know, they got people yelling at me. I got to come over here and bother you. You know, you got to make sure that I might have to come back here in about 2 hours. And if I do, I might have a warrant and I might search your house. So I definitely don't want to find anything because I don't think you're a bad guy. All right, take it easy. Bye-bye. You know, stuff like that can happen, does happen. And rather than do it because of a payoff, instead of doing it because I'm bribing the cops, because WOGs bribe police, why don't we just all be on the same team? And if you don't think that that actually works, it goes on every day in every nation. The Masons have done it. Every single secret organization has done it. The Skull and Bones have done it. So why don't we do it too? You know, it works. We have to look after each other. We have to find reasons. Okay, we have to find reasons to support each other. We have to find reasons to make each other right, not wrong. We have to get rid of the infighting. And we have to make certain that we can all get behind this idea of deflecting the madness, this crazy marching path that people are going on. Because it's not going to work. You know, it's not going to work. And we're all going to wind up getting in cattle cars. I want to avoid WOGs and cattle cars. You know, I don't want anyone to die in camps, but I sure don't want WOGs to die in camps, and WOGs don't want anyone to die in camps. And so we are the seeds of the resistance, but we're the most frightening kind of resistance available. These guys who go and they paint themselves up and they go to these protests and throw burning bottles and take dramatic photos of themselves wearing, you know, ski masks and everything else, that does nothing. Short term, yeah, okay, so you kill a couple cops and they're victims too. You know, you're not doing anything with that. You're not helping anybody with that. So what you have to do is you have to find a way that you can manipulate the laws so that everybody gets on the same side. You see what I mean? The police are not the problem. They are the tool. They are the sword. You must attack the arm that wields the sword, okay? Or manipulate the arm in such a way that the sword is dropped, okay? This is what you need to do, and that's sort of the whole idea. So with the North American Union, kind of straight off topic there, with the North American Union, yeah, you betcha the Constitution's going to be toast. I totally agree with you. I think it's tragic, and a lot of Americans, you know, they're like, well, I don't want Mexicans to be Americans. I don't want Canadians to be Americans. Well, you can look at it that way, or you can go, you know what? I just got a whole lot more places I can hopefully run to, and maybe, you know, we can get these people on the same side. It's the way it is, and you know, honestly, I think the borders are wide open so that when they vote on this thing, they'll have enough of a voter base inside of Mexico where they'll just let all, you know, the immigrants come in and they'll be made Americans and then they can vote. And what a shock, they voted to allow all Mexico in here. I mean, this is the idea. Do I think that's bad? No, Mexicans are hardworking people. You know, they are. They're really hardworking people. I think that they've been slaves for years. I think they should have a slice of the good life, you know. But there it is. You know, that's my whole take on it. Now, another piece of feedback here. Dear Sean, yeah, I've been following the comments on a WOG stronghold on Newsreel. Ooh, stronghold, scary word. I prefer the term resort. Good idea. The difficulties, I would think, would boil down on two. location, and funding. Well, obviously. With logs being so widespread, one stronghold will never be centrally located enough for all of us. Well, that's if you consider any location remote enough for your person would definitely, but would be by definition hard or at least inconvenient to reach. Correct. Absolutely correct. Buying the land, constructing a stronghold, equipping the same, all require a lot of cash. Not to mention licensing and such for that of the pistol range you mentioned. Have you considered constructing a stronghold in phases? First, you buy the land. Security at that point would maintain through obscurity. Clear, prepare a portion for camping. Throw up a berm for the range. As time, funds allow, perhaps a cabin or a shack to throw up some fencing, add solar wind power, some sort of water purification. The camp area would retain a house to overflow in the event that the stronghold should actually be used as a bug-out location. More people than the cabin could hold show up. Storage of bulk items like food, fuel on site would be advisable, as well as seed and tool gardens along with tech manuals. However, such storage can be phased in as well. Buying some vacuum-sealed food stuffs and ammo is put in one place. Placing secure storage buildings on site is another. Given time, you could progress from a tent to a concrete bunker. A plan today is better than a good plan tomorrow. With phased construction plan, you have the best of both worlds. Any mistakes or improvements can either be corrected or incorporated in the next phase. Hey, maybe get off another 2 seasons of patrolling out in the process, I'll bet. Now we're standing by Mook. Well, here's the general idea. Now, on the location and the funding, the location that I'm going to wind up putting this place is going to be somewhere where the dollar goes farther. So we're thinking like South America, we're thinking Thailand, we're thinking Vietnam, we're thinking places where you can live with servants in a house for about $300 a month. Lots of places in the world will let you do this. Okay, there's lots of places because we live in a first world nation. Now, the first thing you want to do, and you got to understand, is that this, it isn't a stronghold as such. What I want this place to be is I want it to be a training location. Okay, you run courses there. Wogs just don't, like, certain people would go and work and live there and stay full time, but that's like that's a very, very select group of people. A majority of people will be on an invitation basis who can go there and do training. They become certified, they're able to get their scuba training in, they're able to get their rifle training in, and they're able to, you know, go there for a month, 2 months, come back to the world. This isn't a runaway forever kind of a thing. This is something that people can go to, train at, leave, go back to the world, and if need be, then this just becomes like the first city in a series of cities that could open should everything take a cosmic crap. It has to be in a remote location. It has to be hard to get to for obvious security reasons. So this is the idea. I'm not against your idea, but it is primarily funded to be a resort. And hopefully, once the resort is up and running, which is going to be, fueled by WOGs, essentially, who pay money to go there, do some training, you know, get some stuff in. Rather than going to Club Med and doing a bunch of really dumb stuff, you can do it on a larger scale and go out there and do cool stuff. And there's a lot of cool ideas I've got on that. So the concept now becomes, well, how do we pay for all this? And I'm not a big fan of reinventing the wheel. You know, I don't like trying to do stuff that hasn't been tried and tested. So the people that I look for, has anyone done anything like this? And you betcha, Arthur C. Clarke did this. Arthur C. Clarke moved to Thailand. Or I could be wrong. I don't think it was Thailand. I think he went someplace right by Thailand. Is it Sri Lanka? Ah, brain is melting. Anyway, but the idea is he already went there, and he fueled all of this with his books. You know what I mean? He sold his books sell, the money comes in from that. Since, you know, you need less money to survive, you could work in the general area. The idea, of course, is which you'd employ largely indigenous populace. Because if you move to a region of the world where nobody has everything and everyone's in severe poverty, like, say, India, okay, you move there and you've got, a staff of 500 people working for you. And these people aren't slaves. I mean, these people have, like, you make sure that they have dwellings that are decent, clean places. They have attention to medical. They can get medical attention. They can have clean food, clean water. They got sanitation in place. You support these people. You help these people up so that they have a stronger, you know, teaching English, all these kind of things. You know what I mean? You do this stuff so that people can, you make their lives better. And in doing so, the indigenous populace is going to look after you. They're going to make sure that nothing bad happens to you because you're the goose that lays the golden eggs. And this is the idea. You know, so it's not about isolation. It's about, you know, uplifting community so that we can build a better world. And it's not, I mean, yeah, you know, people would look at that and say, well, you know, what you're doing is you're building an empire and you're, yeah, sure. But there are people, like, we're not going to be huge. Okay, we're not going to have, like, 1,000 people in a regiment and rank and file army. That's not what we're doing here. Rather than look at, like, the British army, I'd probably look more like Blackwater, and I think that might be a little bit closer to what we're doing, only we're not mercenaries. We're just a bunch of guys who like to go adventuring and stuff like that. You see what I mean? That's sort of the idea here. So I appreciate the feedback. Anybody who's got cool ideas, that's what donations are going to start to fund, by the way. That's what book sales are going to be going for. So if people, you know, I just have to write more books, you know, because hopefully if I can write good books, people will buy them. And that's the dream. Maybe it won't happen in 5 years. Maybe it won't happen in 10 years. But as long as we can get it going, then, you know, there it is. So that's how that works. Anyway, on to Sort Yourself Out. Dear Sean, I've been a long-time listener since the What the Hell show. This is a two-part comment, so I can understand if it just gets discarded. Well, you know, people must think that I just, you know, throw out mail, you know, all the way. Anyway, I'm 20 years old and already going through a divorce. Yeah, that's rough. That's rough. But it's better that you go through a divorce at 20 than it is to go through a divorce at 40. At 20, you get through it. You can still have, like, you know, you're still young. Lots of time. Made a bad call. That's okay. Get out of it. Now, the marriage was great until she decided to be a victim of pharma fascism. She ended up taking 15 Xanax a day, had to leave not only because of her addiction, tried to help her countless times, but because she became overly aggressive towards myself, and I was actually awakened with a 12-inch long butcher knife to my throat. This is definitely a warning sign. Time to go. I've become extremely stressed, and I've ended up picking up smoking again. Sorry. What can I do to help myself calm down and eventually stop smoking? I know you've spoken about this before, Sean. On the Sean Kennedy show, I believe you said your mother and brother-in-law smoked and somehow quit. Yes, hypnotism. Hypnotism. You betcha. Worked for my mom, worked for my brother-in-law. Make sure you go see a hypnotist who offers a money-back guarantee. And it's very, very difficult. Smoking is, they put billions, literally billions of dollars to make it very, very difficult for you to quit that stuff. It goes past the blood-brain barrier, very dangerous crap. So you want to watch that. You want to watch that. But yeah, hypnotism is the way to go. And incidentally, hypnotism is a really great way to get over a lot of issues, and not just like things like smoking. I mean, that just shows how effective it is. If it can get rid of something that's an actual drug and blood-brain barrier, what else could you use it for? Could you use that to get over some post-traumatic stress disorder? Could you use that to get over family issues that are holding you back? Could you use that to get over, say, tragic events that have happened in your life that you can't seem to put behind you because they're too traumatic? Absolutely. Absolutely. Hypnotism is the software patch. Okay, most of the problems in life that you experience, there's two kinds of problems. There's hardware problems and software problems. If you have a hardware problem, it means like your leg's broken. Hardware problem. However, if you're like depressed a lot, chances are that's a software problem. And if you can figure out a way to get that software patch in there, and hypnotism is a great way to do it, why not use that as a tool? Why not hack your head and make yourself a better person? So part two of his question here is, I know you're a fan of edged weapons. Well, I like tools, but, you know, I won't split hairs with you. And I'm looking one for myself. I have a Kershaw, but I'm not sure how good they are as a folder. I know Cold Steel talks about how great their blades are, but the price tag is a bit high. What's a good tactical folder that won't break the bank? Thank you. Well, you know, I'm not really in the game of recommending products or whatever. I don't get kickbacks from anyone. But what I would recommend is I'd check out a company called Columbia River Knife and Tool, CRKT. They make a really good product for, I carry CRKT stuff. I think I carry, I'm trying to remember what the name of it is. I also carry an Emerson Striker, which is a more pricey brand. But my three carries are an Emerson, CRKT makes some good stuff. And if you're into something that's a little bit more overt, not quite so covert, you should check out 511, the guys who came out with the 511 Royal Robbins pants. I wear 511 stuff corporate all the time. That's all I wear downtown is 511 stuff. Their concealment shirts and everything. I'm like the biggest 511 whore in the world. So 511 gear, and they just started coming out with knives. And Steve Tarani, great guy. There's a Polynesian knife called a Karambit, which he pretty much brought to North America, And he's now started making what a curved blade, because the term karambit has been copyrighted and everybody's making one now because it's really, really popular. But he makes a very affordable karambit, which is called the Steve Tarani. I think it's a curved blade. But if you go to the 511 site, very, very affordable. Great knife. Curved blades knives are awesome knives. Small blade. Really, really cool. So definitely you want to check that out. Something you want to look at. All right, so into the news, in recruiting news. Now, how's this for Super Soldier programs coming in? This was sent to me by Hatter of Madness. In Fort Jackson, South Carolina, Austin Swarner left high school to care for his mother while she fought a losing battle with cancer. Tony Brown wanted to begin supporting himself and left two classes shy of a diploma. Haley Holden got tired of trying to make it through school while flipping burgers until 1 a.m., But the U.S. Army, eager to fill its ranks amid wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, doesn't see them as dropouts. They're recruits who only need a GED before they're ready to begin basic training. And so the Army formally opens up its first prep school last Wednesday. It's academic immersion, explained Colonel Jeffrey Sanderson, chief of staff at Fort Jackson, home of the Army's biggest basic training school. Our studies show that only three out of every 10 people of military age are being capable of joining the Army. Three out of 10, okay, are available to join the Army. That stat right there jumped out at me. I'm like, how in the hell is it possible that only 30% of combat age people are able to join the Army? I mean, how does that work out? That includes turning six World War II era buildings. It goes on here. It says, that includes turning six World War II era buildings at the base into a mini campus of Spartan classrooms and barracks. Under the year-long pilot project, classes of about 60 soldiers will enter the month-long program every week. Month-long. So in 1 month, you get it. Their day begins in uniform at 5 a.m. with physical training. Then they attend about 8 hours of academic review classes, followed by homework each evening. An hour of marching drills and military discipline is thrown in for good measure. Wow. It's a tough, structured day. But some of them have sat on the couch for 18 years, and I haven't heard any howling yet, said social studies instructor John Solis, one of the 14 certified teachers on hand. By and large, they're chomping on the bit. They're ready to go. The soldiers work in small classrooms outfitted with simple desks, chairs, dry erase boards, in-desk computers are used for test taking, group 3 to 4 in a class, and students hunch over special GE preparation books, working on basic math, social studies, and reading selections. You know, and this is the kind of stuff, as a footnote here, just as an aside, this is the kind of stuff, like, if you've got a structure, like, you go, you say, you know, whatever, I get my hands on $500,000, okay? I inherit it, or I win the lottery, or whatever. You know, I come by some chunk of change. Okay? So, if you were to go to some place, build a bunch of geodesic domes, and just start teaching people. Start getting correspondence courses, where you got people who've already got the course come in and work as tutors. You could get WOGs, show up there, work on degrees. I mean, think about, we're talking about free education here. We're talking about a place where you can really get certified, you know, come up with a name for it, like some kind of academy. Hell, I'm open for a name. If anyone's got a name for this thing, send it to me. It'd be interesting to, you know, I'll give you props for it. What the hell? Recruits must score in the top half of the Army's aptitude test to qualify for the prep school and get 2 tries at the General Education Development Certificate. If they still can't pass, the Army will release them from their contract. He said the Army prefers those who graduate from high school on their own because it demonstrates tenacity. Wow. But the reality of current graduation rates has the Army pressed to find an alternative. Wow, is it really that bad? Holden, who's 18, of Medford, Oregon, is racing through her first week of practice tests before taking the formal GED exam soon. She left home at 16, one of 9 children of a mill worker, and wants to be a military police officer. There's no jobs out there. Nothing. It's just horrible. And it's hard to try to support myself and go to school at the same time. Swarner, a native of Baton Rouge, Los Angeles, left school in the 9th grade. Now 20, he dreams of becoming a combat engineer. With the small classes, hovering teachers, and disciplined schedule, Swarner said he's learning quickly, because if he doesn't, he's going to get thumped. The teachers are helping here a lot. My best class is English. The hardest is probably math. Well, there's a shock. With the GED behind them, Swarner and his classmates will enter basic training at Fort Jackson, where more than half of all incoming male soldiers and more than 8% of female recruits go through basic combat training. Others will go into the Army's three other basic training sites. Those entering prep school have signed on for a 2 to 4 year stint, just like any new recruit. We have two missions: get the GED and prepare them physically and mentally for basic training, said the school's commander, Captain Brian Gaddis. Last October, Army officials said they intended to expand the force by adding 74,000 soldiers by 2010, with the active duty force growing to a total of 547,000 people. But Sanderson said the Army's own study showed that only 3 in 10 people ages 17 to 24 are eligible to enlist, with the remainder, okay, now check this out, 3 out of 10 between 17 and 24. So the rest of them, 70% of them, are barred by health or legal issues. Now, what do you suppose the war on drugs is a big part of that? You know, what do you suppose that, grass is what's keeping people out of the Army? So, and the really crazy thing is, which really gets me, going, is the fact that Israeli soldiers, and Israelis, you know, like them or not, they fight a lot. Okay, these people are in combat all the time. And you know what the Israelis are giving their troops to deal with the combat stress? I'll give you 3 guesses. You betcha, they're giving them grass. Okay, they're giving them grass to deal with the combat stress. I don't understand why people cannot seem to figure out that this is not something that is going to hurt people. It's something that can be very, very useful. You can make fuel out of it. I don't get it. You know, Recomedia right here. You know, go check out the book, The Emperor Wears No Clothes. There's a lot of stuff that's going on there that really makes me wonder what is going on with people. Like, I'm not saying, you know, you start, you know, carpet bombing with hay bales from galaxies, you know, dropping, you know, maybe that's the way to sort out the Middle East. You know, we go get some aerosol ecstasy. We just fly over Palestine, Israel, all those guys. And we just, you know, set up all of our, you know, really high-grade satellite equipment. And we just hold an outdoor rave for about 6 months. You know, just bombard those people with ecstasy and massive, massive dance hallucinogens. And pretty quick, you know, they're going to wind up having sex and orgies. And you got Arabs sleeping with Jews who are sleeping with Muslims. And pretty soon, you know, everybody doesn't remember why they were angry at each other. And, you know, why not? You know, we can do that. It's a plan, you know, or you just drop enough weed in there that maybe everybody smokes up and forgets what they're fighting about. The bottom line here is we got to get some people to stop fighting. That's the idea, you know. But anyway, this is what the Army's doing now, is they're running a prep school. And how long before, you know, if this thing is successful, you can bet you're going to start seeing military private schools that are opened up that are going to take people off the street and, you know, kids that get taken away from their parents and stuff like that are like 5 and 6. Why not have military? Why not just, if you get these kids, what are you going to do with them? Let's turn it from a problem into a solution. Let's make sure that we get them before they're 17 and put them on the right track. Great film. You want to check out a film called Lords of Discipline. Kind of a scary concept when you look at what military schooling can be all about. So, moving right along here, let's get into some Plague Watch news. This was sent to me by Monochrome. Great story. This is something I haven't heard anything about. Very, very scary. And it's not getting any airtime at all. Rural Kanpur, okay, this is an area out there, is fighting its most frightening scourge, a mystery disease that has left a long line of bodies in its trail and doesn't seem anywhere finished. What started in one village 2 weeks ago, so this is in 2 weeks, okay, so we're dealing with a 14-day span. What started in a village 2 weeks ago has now spread to 350 people and has claimed 160 lives in 14 days. Thousands more are bedridden. On an average, 15 to 20 people have been dying every day. Saturday saw the highest toll in a day, 24. The district's health department is somewhat confused about the nature of the disease that has struck. They don't know what it is. At the beginning, the diagnosis was viral fever. Then doctors concluded that it was falciparum malaria. But after 2 weeks, they ruled out both and still don't have an exact sample of what it is that is dropping these people. We really don't know exactly what it is. We're depending on the finding of a team of specialists from New Delhi. This is all in India, said Dr. R.C. Agarwal, the district's new chief medical officer. Specialists from the Infectious Disease and Surveillance Program, New Delhi, have collected the blood samples from a few patients. The team will make its findings known in a few days. But the fear of the unknown has resulted in a mass exodus of villagers, which means that if any of them have got it, and they're moving out, they're going to be spreading that, because this disease could have a sleeper phase where there's no symptoms showing. Pulendar and Dar villages under Molassa Block are the worst affected. About 1,000 people in these two villages alone are battling the disease. Dar has taken the maximum number of casualties. The village has lost about 30 people, but only one doctor has visited so far, and that was 15 days ago. Kuldeep Singh and Ram Avtar of Dar break down screaming. A lot of people still can't be saved. We need doctors. Rajesh, 38, of Pulendar Village says, everyone here is waiting for doctors to come and examine people, but they aren't coming and we're counting our dead. On Sunday morning, the mystery fever claimed Tilak Singh, who's 35, and his nephew Vika Singh, who's 11. Now, these are young people. These aren't the elderly that it's going down. Okay? This is some scary shit, and it's not getting a lot of play. Dar still remains a perfect picture of neglect and apathy. Heaps of garbage continue to be littered all over. Houses are surrounded by stinking filth. Roads are waterlogged. A perfect breeding grounds for diseases like malaria. The village's secondary school has been shut down for an indefinite period. Children would wade through knee-deep water to reach the school. Santosh Prajapati is struggling to cope with looking after 8 family members who've been afflicted by the disease. He has hired a tractor to shift them to the hospital in Kanpur City. I have borrowed money from my relatives. If they remain here, they will die, he says. Now, nobody is talking about what this disease is. We're talking about some serious dead in 14 days. A 14-day kill total? That's very, very frightening, especially coming out of an area of India where you got that much poverty and so much, just poverty. I mean, you got filthy conditions, kind of scary stuff. Very, very scary stuff, in fact. Let's get on to some cyberpunk kit. Now, this is something that you could buy right now, and I would definitely advise. I'm going to be picking one of these up. I've been using a THE Spec Ops wallet for a long time. I bought that wallet maybe 5 years ago. Served me well. Still using it to this very day. Outstanding wallet. But the technology is changing, and so that's why I'm looking at this DFR that was sent to me by Prodigy. Thank you very much, Prodigy. The RFID tags and identification cards have been shown to be insecure. Everybody knows this. All WOGs know this. Done stories on this. Attackers are able to read and copy information stored on these tags and create copies they can use themselves. Again, big problem. Governments, corporations, franchises, and banks are now using RFID tags embedded in identification cards. Now, these cards are not secure. So it's like you're walking around with your credit card numbers on the outside wearing a t-shirt. Okay, very easy to get. These tags allow cards to be read remotely. This company here, DIFRware, they make wallets that block the ability to read them. Very, very interesting stuff. Our RFID blocking wallets ensure that cards with RFID tags within the wallet cannot be read while the wallet is closed. This gives you the ability to control when, how, and by whom your cards are accessed. To allow the RFID tag on the card to be read, simply open the wallet and direct it towards the reader. Our products are lab certified by the United States GSA for protecting RFID's cards used by the military. Very, very interesting stuff. And they make one for passports as well. They got a series of different products they make. Something you want to check out. Thank you very much, Prodigy, for sending that in. And in AI news, this was sent in by Fat Ninja. Now, you remember a while back we were talking about how they took rat brains and they used a rat brain that they wired up inside of a tank to fly a stealth fighter. This is an old story. Then they took a rat brain and they grew it up and they made it so that it could, you know, run around a room in a robot. Well, where are we going with this? Let's project a little bit. Let's project to next year. Brains on chip in AI news. Thanks again to Fat Ninja. Brains on chip. Brains on a chip. Robotic rescue choppers. See-through displays. These are just a few of the projects the Pentagon's Mad Science Division has hatched up for next year. Earlier this year, DARPA Defense Department's Way Out Research Arm submitted a $3.29 billion budget for the 2009 fiscal year. So this is close, okay? There in it are dozens of new programs, one more far-reaching than the next. A particularly wild project is the Systems of Neuromorphic Adaptive Plastic Scalable Electronics, or SYNAPS. The program will develop a brain-inspired electronic chip that mimics the function, size, and power consumption of a biological cortex. DARPA promises us, if successful, the program will provide the foundations for functional machines to supplement humans in many of the most demanding situations faced by warfighters today, like getting usable information out of video feeds and starting tasks. That also means that we could wind up with more killer robots, because, you know, that's what a warfighter is. The agency is looking at spending $3 million next year to get it started on its faux brain effort. My guess, it will take considerably more cash than that to get it done. But that's just what we got on paper, right? I mean, the Nightingale program aims to put together building blocks for a fully autonomous flyer that could serve as both unmanned ambulance in the sky and as a robotic search and rescue chopper looking for pickup, stabilizing wounded that are dangerous and complicated jobs. But by squeezing the integrated life support capabilities into a small, unmanned, or optionally piloted air vehicle, DARPA thinks Nightingale could keep some soldiers out of harm's way. I'm writing about something very similar to this in the current book. And what I think is going to happen with this is they're not going to be able to do it quite as well as they want. So what they're going to do is they're going to start getting volunteers who allow themselves to be augmented to mate up with the machines. That's what we're doing with the Afternow side of it. But this is a very Afternow story altogether. Now, all in with the drone search for missing and wounded, this low-cost, high-availability air ambulance could be deployed near the war zone to get casualties to hospitals in a hurry. Of course, making this reality won't be easy. Technical challenges, including intelligence, autonomous flight behavior, sensor integrated guidance, and control enabled to fly in complex terrain, fully autonomous selection, or of suitable landing locations, dual mode, ground and flight propulsion, the list goes on. But that's not, and that isn't the only new robot DARPA has in mind for 2009. There's a $4 million effort to start work on a robotic naval vessel to operate for years with minimal human interaction. Nice. $4.5 million to build a teeny, tiny, unmanned Osprey that can perch on a rooftop and silently spy on foes. Another $4 million to arm small drones with an expensive, low-weight precision munition effective against soft targets, including people. And $2 million for a walking tetrapod that can carry soldiers' gear. Sounds a lot like our favorite robot, the eerily lifelike four-legged Big Dog. DARPA is also looking to spend $5 million on laser-guided bullets, ammo steered by beams of light, and able to turn on a dime, very runaway. If you ever watch that film, the program works as planned. The agency promises it will make every shooter with a 50-caliber weapon into a precision sniper at a greater than a 2-kilometer range. So reaching out and being able to hit people with a 50 at 2,000 meters. Very, very scary. Another $3 million will go towards spotting rocket-propelled grenades before they're launched, somehow. DARPA doesn't elaborate how that trick will be pulled off, only would involve cognitive swarm recognition technology. In phase one of the program, DARPA boasts that the system will be capable of detection rates greater than 95%. Very, very, very interesting stuff coming out of DARPA. And you notice, of course, all this is based upon, you know, the warfighter thing. You know, this is all, this is a very scary world that we're entering into, because you know for a fact that this, you know, what we think is just going to be used for warfighter, I mean, a lot of this stuff is going to wind up getting pushed back on us, and I could see this being used on our people. After all, we don't have posse comitatus anymore, and Canada just signed into law a concept that's, we're allowing American troops on our soil anytime we declare an emergency to quote-unquote help out. And it's kind of a disturbing world we're heading for right now. So I'm not so really sure that I like the direction that we're going in, but I do think that it's, we have to be aware of it and we have to be prepared for it. And in chipping the kids news, affluent Mexicans worried about soaring kidnapping rates are spending thousands of dollars to implant tiny transmitters under their skin so satellites can help find them even when stuffed in the boot of a car. Kidnapping jumped almost 40% between 2004-2007 in Mexico. According to official statistics, Mexico ranks with conflict zones like Iraq and Colombia as one of the worst countries for abduction. The recent kidnappings and murder of Fernando Marti, 14, son of a well-known businessman, sparked an outcry the country has already hardened to crime. More people, including a number of middle-class Mexicans, are seeking to have a microchip implanted under their skin by Zega, a Mexican security firm whose sales jumped 13% this year. The company claims to have more than 2,000 clients. Detractors say the chip is little more than a gimmick and serves no real security purpose. The company injects a crystal-encased chip the size of a shape of rice in the client's bodies with a syringe. The transmitter in the chip communicates with a large GPS-enabled device carried by the client. Zega says. The gadget reports its location to the company, and the owner presses a panic button, something the device could arguably do without an under-the-skin chip. So they put it on there, and then the chip apparently, you know, says where it is. Catherine Albright, a U.S. consumer privacy activist, Catherine Albrecht, a U.S. consumer privacy activist, said the chip is flashy, is a flashy overpriced gadget that only identifies a person and cannot locate someone without another bigger GPS device that kidnappers can easily find and destroy. She says fear of kidnapping was driving well-off Mexicans to buy an unproven technology. They are a prime target because they've got money and they've got a worry that you can't combine those two and offer them a false sense of security, which is exactly what this is. Very, very interesting stuff. So, you know, if somebody could come up with a way to make this thing work, you know, it's an interesting idea. I personally, you know, I carry a lot of kit with me daily. I see people were talking about bags out here in the Second Life field. What I'm going to be talking about patrolling is Maxpedition Pack. I like the Maxpedition gears myself. That's my man purse, my fast action gun bag, as I like to call it. You know, I'm trying to remember what the model number I use is. I think it's a Typhoon. I think it's the Maxpedition Typhoon is the one I use. Madly in love with it. Think it's the best bag ever made. And I think that, you know, generally, as we progress in technology, things like this, I don't like convergence. I like having separate gizmos. So, you know, it's a good idea to, it's a good idea to have your kit with you, you know, but you can't look like you're crazy. You know, you gotta have your own kind of version of the Bauer bag. You know, the old Jack Bauer bag he runs around with. It's the way to go. So that's what they're doing in Mexico, though. They're putting the chips in people because you got rich people afraid that they're gonna be kidnapped. And let's be real, being kidnapped is some scary, scary stuff. Moving on, we got some Big Brother news. Speaking of getting chipped and kidnapped and all the rest of it, and Big Brother news. This data allows investigators to, totally screwed that up here. Let me try that again. This data allows investigators to identify suspects, examine their contacts, establish relationships between conspirators, and place them in a specific location at a certain time. So said the UK Home Office last week as it announces new plans to give law enforcement agencies and councils on other public bodies access to the details of people's text messages, emails, and internet activity. The move followed its announcement in May that it was considering creating a massive central database. Now, we talked about this, to store all of its data as a tool to help the security services tackle crime and terrorism. Meanwhile, the U.S. and FISA Amendments Acts, which became law in July, already law, allows security services to intercept anyone's international phone calls and emails without a warrant for up to 7 days. Governments around the world are developing increasingly sophisticated electronic surveillance methods in a bid to identify terrorist cells and spot criminal activity. So since you and I, I'm in Canada, you guys are in the States, we're international, boom! They can keep 7 day logs of this show, you betcha! And they can label us all terrorists, because we're talking about guns and gear and knives and all kinds of stuff. Oh, hell yeah. How hard would it be to spin this into a terrorist thing, you know? Really. However, technology companies, in particular telecommunications firms and internet service providers, have often been criticized for assisting the governments in what many see as unwarranted intrusion, most notably in China. Now German electronics company Siemens has gone a step further, developing a complaint surveillance in a box system called the Intelligence Platform, designed for security services in Europe and Asia. It has already sold the system to 60 countries. According to a document obtained by New Scientist, the system integrates tasks typically done by separate surveillance teams or machines, pooling data from sources such as telephone calls, emails, internet activity, bank transactions, and insurance records. It sorts through this mountain of information using the software Siemens dubs Intelligence Modules. The software is trained on a large number of sample documents to pick out items such as names, phone numbers, and places from generic text. This means it can spot names and numbers that crop up alongside anyone of interest to the authorities and catalog any documentation that contains such associates. This is pretty scary stuff. Once a person is being monitored, pattern recognition software first identifies their typical behavior, such as repeated calls to certain numbers over a period of a few months. The software can then identify any deviations from the norm and flag up unusual activities, such as transactions with a foreign bank or contact someone who is under surveillance. So analysts can take a closer look, included within the package is a phone cam monitoring center developed by the joint venture company Nokia Siemens Networks. However, it is far from clear whether the technology will prove accurate. Security experts warn that data fusion technologies tend to produce a huge number of false positives, flagging up perfectly innocent people as suspicious. The systems tend to produce false as suspicious. Combining two different sources of data has a tendency to increase your false positive rate and your false negative rate, says Ross Anderson, a computer security engineer at the University of Cambridge. If you're looking for burglars in a rundown district where 50% have criminal conviction, you will find plenty. But if you're trying to find terrorists among airline passengers, they're extremely rare. Almost all of your hits will be false. It's true. You know, this is stuff that you got to be aware of and go, hey, but this is what they're doing, and it's Gen 1. Don't you worry, they're going to be getting better and better and better with it. So what's another story we got here? How about some killer robot news? Now this is a great story because it directly ties into my daily hack. Thank you very much for a meal. ZeroOps Systems was founded in 2007 with intent to provide exciting technologies in the field of robotics and computer vision. By the summer of 2008, we've succeeded in creating several successful prototypes of a paintball sentry gun, the Mercenary. The future of ZeroOps Systems will be based around providing innovative products in the fields of paintball, military training, and computer vision. We pride ourselves on doing things never seen before on the professional market. The Mercenary is a first of its kind, a robotic paintball turret that can track and shoot at players without any human operator. An onboard computer processor with real-time video acquires targets using motion and color processing, then tracks them using logic techniques. Players can interact with the Mercenary by setting options through the onboard LCD display or through an interactive target. User adjustable settings include rate of fire, burst modes, turret aggression, and scenario modes. One scenario includes team-based play with the use of colored jerseys. Now, you can buy this thing. It's available on the market right now for $2,950. $3,000. $3,000 for that bad boy. Very sexy piece of kit. Open the box. Good to go. With the paintballs. Firing paintballs. Not frozen paintballs, just regular everyday paintballs. You know, not paintballs you reload with anything, just paintballs. In Decker news, thank you very much to Bucky Fuller for sending this one. This is a good one. This week at the Black Hat Security Conference, two security researchers will discuss the findings which can completely bring Windows Vista to its knees. Mark Dowd of IBM Internet Security Systems, ISS, and Alexander Sotarov of VMware Incorporated have discovered a technique that can be used to bypass all memory protection safeguards that Microsoft built into Windows Vista, period, full stop. These new methods have been used to get around Vista's address space layout randomizer, the ASLR, data execution prevention, DEP, and other protections by loading malicious content through an active web browser. The researchers were able to load whatever they currently wanted into the location they wished using a variety of objects such as Java, ActiveX, and even .NET objects. The feat was achieved by taking advantage of the way Internet Explorer and other browsers handle active scripting in the operating system. While this may seem like any standard security hole, other researchers say that the work is a major breakthrough and there's very little Microsoft can do to fix the problem. The attacks work differently than do other security exploits. They aren't based on any new Windows vulnerabilities, but instead takes advantage of the way Microsoft chose to guard Vista's fundamental architecture, according to Dino DiZovi, a popular security researcher. The genius of this is that it's completely reusable. They have attacks that let them load a chosen content to a chosen location with chosen permissions. That's completely game over. According to Microsoft, many defenses have added to the Windows Vista, Windows Server 2008, were added to stop all host-based attacks. For example, ASLR, meant to stop attackers from predicting key memory addresses by randomly removing process, blah, 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 blah. Bottom line, though, doesn't work, and there's a hack for it that basically pwns the Microsoft operating system. So maybe Ubuntu might be the way to go. I don't know, just sort of a notion here, just kind of talking about it. Yeah, so, you know, that's something you want to be aware of. Maybe now is the time to make the switch. I'm going to be doing that. The problem is if I make the switch, though, I've got to make sure that I make the switch within 7 days, get everything up and on the go, and make sure that, will Second Life run on Ubuntu? I don't know. I hope it does. I'd like to install it on another system. I just wouldn't like to have it all set up. People here are saying it will, so that's cool. Maybe I'll have to get people to help me out with that. All right. Today's Daily Hack, we've got a couple good ones. We've got a fireball shooter sent in by Debrimi. This is just cool. Make a flaming fireball shooter just like Magikans use. Save big bucks, make your own. Awesome pyrotechnics effect. Safe to use indoors and completely scalable. As well, you can buy yourself that $3,000 robotic gun turret, or you can, thanks very much to Paladin, he's sending a do-it-yourself kit. So you can, this Instructable will show you how to design, build, and troubleshoot an airsoft gun turret with a USB interface. The turret can be toggled between manual mode, where human interface is using a Xbox 360 controller, or automatic detect and fire mode, where the turret springs to life, detects any human presence in its surroundings. Firing at humans is not advised. Obviously not. And your Recomedia this week, other than the books I've already recommended, well, I've got some Iron Geek for you. This was sent in by Jupe. It's a nuke survival bit. Very, very cool. Very, very cool story. Definitely something you want to check out. As well, we got a Binaural Beats PDF that was from DEFCON 16 from Data Maggot. Thank you very much. We're talking about Binaural Beats, different ways to hack your head, because after all, hey, the ultimate weapon is the mind. Everything else is just a tool. And let's not forget that we've got some more After Now fan fiction. Very good stuff. Episode 2, called The Storm, Towers of Glass and Dust. Very, very slick. And that was done by Xander Sabova, who is a very cool guy who's been doing some great work with that. Definitely check it out. And, you know, After Now stuff, gotta love it. Always good for the post-apocalyptic fiction. And, that's the second installment of the Alexander Elmwood Chronicles, just so you know. So definitely you want to go check that out. But that's all I got for you today. Don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free broadcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. If you cannot donate, please distribute. And if you can donate, please donate by going to the Donate tab on the Dark Atlas website or send an envelope to Rant Media Studios, Box 18121, 1215C, 56th Street, Delta, BC, Canada, V4M2M4. And while you still can, it might be worthwhile to pick up a copy of Scab Wings of Abaddon. That's one of my horror books. We might pull that off fairly soon because we want to do a re-release. So there's not going to be too much going on there with that book for, I don't know how much longer Sam wants to keep that up there because he wants to do a re-release of it. But if you want to get one of the original copies that are available, they are still currently available. They'll be available for a limited time. Because we are talking about taking it down. I'm not trying to just say that to get you to buy books. I'm just being honest with you. So if you want to pick up a copy of Scab Wings of Abaddon, it's probably better to do it sooner rather than later. And believe me, there's people who are pissed off. There's people pissed off that we're not re-releasing Bloodstained Rabbit, which a lot of people have said is a better story. People have read it, said they like it better. I'm listening to these people because I want the style of the new After Now novel to be similar to the Bloodstained stuff. Very rapid pace, lots of action, lots of scenery, lots of, the stuff that people want. I want to thank the Army of Flying Monkeys and their assistance in gathering data. If you have information you'd like to get to me, you can reach me at newsreel, N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, make sure you check out some Psytrance. And I'm going to fade out now with another awesome track that I've got from somewhere deep in the Wayback Machine. Remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we are at each other's throats. So until next time, that's what Server said. End of line.